Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
So, Isabel Pug is with us in the office normally. Did you know that she's learning to become a blacksmith?
Your dog is learning how to become a blacksmith.
Yeah, almost every single day she makes a bolt for the door. That's all we get.
Yeah, I decided to go with classic crickets. That might, I don't know, that's probably going to be my last. I'm just out at this point. Well, welcome to another episode of the Mark and Todd Cast. I am one of your hosts, Todd Workhoven, and with me, as always, is Mark Middleton. How are you, Mark?
I'm really well.
Good. You're dinking around over there. We've got this new camera setup of three cameras recording this, and so we're doing a test run.
The problem is when I need to switch a camera, I need to look away from my sight line with you,
right,
which makes it look weird.
Right. But, well, and since I can't see the monitor, and so I have no idea when and where you're switching, and that makes me nervous.
Don't try to find the camera. Let the camera find you.
Just a super close up of my nostril. All right. Well. Oh no. Here, I was going to say. Well, let's get it. First, I wanted to ask. I had a question about scars. So our whole body regenerates itself, blah, blah, blah. In our DNA, does every piece of DNA, like when you just extract it out of hair or whatever, does it contain the DNA code for like your whole body?
For your whole body.
So my question is, like, when you get scarred or burned, like, so if you just tear your skin, you regrow the skin, and not like more and more, it knows where to stop. So why does it not generate new cells that know what they're supposed to be?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the how a muscle cell knows where to grow. Right here I need a muscle cell, and right here I need a bone cell. What happens, as far as I understand, is each cell individually is receiving information of basically how far it is from another checkpoint, basically like a gradient value from where it is compared to like the distance from a anchor point, if you will.
Right.
And so here's where the bones start, and if you're further from here than you, and I'm explaining this terribly because I'm not a medical professional, but I'm not a medical professional, and the end result when you have scarring that doesn't self-regenerate, like we do have something in our body that regenerates, and I don't remember but like a lizard tail regenerates,
right.
But we don't have anything other than like hair that continuously grows and fingernails that continuously grow. And the when a scarring event happens, that disrupts those gradient pieces of information of where I'm a muscle cell, I need to grow here. And so you get really clumped up cartilage and clumped up skin cells and clumped up, you know, they're just not uniform anymore because they don't have a reference point that's anchored anymore.
It's just interesting because, I mean, I have many, many, many scars, and it's weird that I know it's new skin and it's new everything else since I've gotten them, but the scars are the same place, the same shape, the same. And I couldn't figure out why we couldn't. Yeah. Cause I mean, we can regrow new skin if we lose our skin there or whatever. And I always wondered how our skin knew when to stop growing. Like, why don't you just have like crazy thick layer of skin that doesn't know it should stop growing?
Or, no, I totally get it. And
then you're that tree man in India that has that crazy skin condition that turns his skin into bark. Have you seen that guy?
Of course we've seen that guy. Okay.
I was about to put everything on hold and talk nothing about the India bark man.
Right. And doesn't he have like a foot that basically looks like a stump?
Yeah. And his arms and hands and every, terrible. Like every 6 years, I feel like they shave them all off and they just grow back. Now my hand thing isn't so bad, is it?
It is.
In comparison, I could be the tree man sitting across from you at the table and you'd have to deal with that.
It is terrible.
I also had, you had started watching something on Hulu, because when I logged in, there was like recently watched, and there is a documentary called Becoming Bond. And it's a documentary about George Lazenby, who played James Bond once in the 60s in Her Majesty's Secret Service, and then never was Bond again. And the way, since I am not a big Bond fan, I had always thought, and I think the prevailing culture thinks, that he's kind of forgotten Bond. He was Bond once and fired because he was terrible, you know, big stupid scandal. But this actor, who wasn't even an actor, and I won't spoil the whole thing because they kind of set in the description, they'll tell you this too, so it's not like big spoilers, but he was just some mechanic that became
a model,
fell into becoming a model, who literally fell into becoming James Bond, even though, so it's the crazy story about he became James, how he, and then after he was offered something like a six picture deal and $1 million like in the '60s. And he just turned it down.
I know.
And the whole documentary it's really interesting. It's pretty much him telling his story, and they kind of do it like that show Drunk History, where they'll do recreations, but the recreation is synced to still be like the person who is originally talking. I know that's a bad way to explain it, but they do little reenactments in it, starring like a lot of famous comics and stuff. Jeff Garland is the only one who can remember now, but all of a sudden all these people show up and do little reenactments. And it's really,
Janine,
really good.
Garofalo in
there's a whole bunch of
people. And
so, but yeah, that, it's worth checking out. That's on Hulu, and it's called Becoming Bond.
And so we then followed that up by watching that,
How was it?
I
always just figure, I mean, I kind of think it's an open secret that all Bond movies are kind of bad, or like don't hold up, or I don't know. I've seen a couple of the modern Bonds. I've seen A View to a Kill, which is terrible. And so I just figured there's that whole, maybe Sean Connery was good in a couple of them, and then it was like bad for a couple decades.
Right. I would say I'm like 25% Bond fan. Like I'm not a diehard fan at all. But I've seen a third of them, and they're definitely enjoyable. You know, Moonraker was terrible. just like comically terrible, but
just like preposterous, I think is what I would think about each one.
Right, exactly. And we'd always heard that there was this lost Bond, and we always assume that it's because he was terrible, and it's quite the opposite.
Yeah.
He ends up being like the most interesting man in the world. Like
totally, he
really is the personification of that guy.
So was he good in the movie?
Yeah. Yeah, he was fantastic. Okay. Yeah, charming and you know, handsome.
Yeah,
and
he literally
debonair.
Just charmed himself. He had never acted before like in anything. And he got the role of James Bond after Sean Connery.
He had done some commercials, and this PSA thing in Great Britain that was it for like tooth decay or something
like that.
Something ridiculous. Like everybody needs to, it's Mr. Brushy and everybody needs to brush their teeth. And that was the only thing on his IMDb at the time. And,
it's
pretty fantastic. Another thing happened this last week is, so we're approaching 90 days of me being on Weight Watchers, and and I've lost 30 pounds.
Oh, nice.
But
I can't tell because you're wearing a gigantic distracting hoodie that looks like that says internet.
Internet.
What is that? That's from something though, right?
So
that's
like
from
the box. There's a Scholastic book from 1996.
Okay.
For kids to learn the internet.
To learn the internet.
I've got it at the office. It is a fantastic book, and so they took the cover of that book and made it into a sweatshirt, yeah. And Brian and Sarah got it for me for my birthday.
It's pretty amazing, or Nick, it's pretty astonishing.
It's astonishing is the right term. Nick hates it when I wear it out in public because I get so much reaction. People come up to me and want selfies. They want
he's
to take
pictures. Jealous.
Yeah, he's totally jealous.
You need to
jealous.
Start an Instagram of all of the people you've taken pictures with. And like, because you know how back when the internet started, it was like the guy that hugs people and like some right. guy that just would hug and like escalating levels of celebrities would then hug him. So you need to be the guy with the
guy
internet
with the internet
shirt.
Sweatshirt. And so he hates it when we're out. But I have an accidental photo, but I've got an incidental before photo of me because we did our staff photos at work.
Okay.
The first day of my Weight Watchers.
Oh, okay.
And I opened it up this last week. Not knowing, I'd forgotten that photo was taken, and I definitely didn't correlate it with
right.
The beginning of weight loss. And I just feel like that's a roly-poly version of me
yeah.
that I don't, I just don't connect with anymore. It's only 30 pounds.
Yeah.
And I've got I've got plenty more to lose and whatever, you know. I don't have a ton of energy about this weight loss process. You know, I'm following the Weight Watchers plan and doing it, and every week I lose like a few pounds and so I don't have like this big thing either way. But then this showed up and I'm like, oh my gosh. That's enormous, and I like stretching out this shirt, and my face is all fat and everything, and so
that's cool though that you can mark that as the
right, and so we will be able to take an after photo in the same
conditions,
exactly.
Except you would light it better, and then you put makeup on, and you would suck your whatever, suck right. your gun as you stand there.
Exactly. So
that's pretty great. So this episode of the Mark and Talk Cast brought to you by Weight Watchers.
Randy says Mark is kind of like James Bond.
Kind of like James Bond. Mostly.
Yeah. So I saw a news article this last week. There's a detailed study that claims that by the year 2030, 95% of miles driven will be by self-driving taxis.
By 2030.
So 13 years from now.
Oh my gosh. 13 years from now.
13 years from now.
What was the thing I just saw? We are now just as far away from the year 2000 as we are from, like, I don't know, 2150 or however old we are.
to the year 45,000. Yeah. And so by 13 years from now, 95% of the miles driven will be by self-driving taxis. And I know that, like, one of Elon Musk's...
95%.
Well, you think of all... citywide commuting. So one of Elon Musk's things about the new self-driving cars, he's talked about the Model 3 and things that will have full self-driving capabilities at some point soon. When you aren't using your car, you can employ your car to be a taxi to do other things.
Because you know what people love to do is to share the most expensive thing that they will probably buy in their lifetime outside of a house and let strangers use it during the day while they're at work.
There's a few details to iron out.
Like massive American consumerism. Yeah. No, I'll just leave the keys in. Just, you can use it.
And so the car would come and pick you up and be an Uber.
Uh-huh.
And so they say 95%.
Someone forgets their work files in their trunk and their car is in Wisconsin.
Showing up at your door in the middle of the my files are in your trunk. Yeah. So that will be a thing. And you will be the other 5%.
Right. Riding my horse to work.
Exactly. And so
I thought originally, because I saw the headline here in the notes, and I thought that 95% of all driving done by self-driving cars will be taxis.
No.
But okay. Yes. What? So where, who, all right. Where did this study come from?
It's, hold on.
This is not to get all.
It's this organization called Rethink. And so they've done rethinking.
They sell self-driving taxis.
They sell self-driving taxis. And they have no conflict of interest. Rethink X, they're rethinking transportation, but there's a really massive document and report that goes and details all this stuff. And so it was released a week ago. And
yeah. Interesting. So. Well, yeah, 13 years is not that long.
True.
Man, the first X-Men movie was 18 years ago. Really? Here's another question. And I think you used this word when we were talking to Brian the Unipiper in our segment. And you said, in spite of blank, you know, something happened. And I was having this discussion this last week. I've never been able to tell if the expression should be in spite or despite. Like, despite the fact that this happened, I was able to do it, or in spite of the fact that this happened, I was able to do it. And I've never been able to tell the difference.
Huh. So in spite and
I know it's hard to say, like, just alone as a
have
word.
Have a similar despite. Meaning to although or even though. They express a contrast between two things. They are both more common in writing than in speaking. Despite is a little more formal than in spite of.
Oh, so they're essentially the same word.
That's what it's claiming.
Or fairly interchangeable. I wonder if they have a similar etymology. Why would there be two words that sounded alike that mean almost the same thing?
Like, yeah. This,
next week, like, on the Marvin podcast.
Cinnamons? Hominins?
No, cinnamons.
Cinnamons and
anyway, yeah. Well, let's move on to some news here. Let me start my lovely teletype over because we finished that time. So in Seattle news, Ivers has sold its flagship Seattle waterfront property to a Los Angeles company for $39.5 million. If you've ever been to the Seattle waterfront, it's the most prominent building there, probably besides the aquarium building.
I mean, it's right next to the ferry, and it's where you
go. He says hi, by the way. It's on Pier 54 and has been there since 1938. On Wednesday, the company said it signed a long-term lease with the new owner, so Ivers Acres of Clams, as well as the company's fish bar, will continue to operate there. Ivers told the Puget Sound Business Journal that the sale of Pier 54 will help suburban expansion, whatever that means. So it seems like they'll still be there. They just won't own that building anymore. Moving on to Oregon news. Oregon rules Portland must build costly water treatment facility because several detections of the parasite Cryptosporidium in Portland's main water supply earlier this year could end up costing the city hundreds of millions of dollars. They found Cryptoocysts in water from the Portland's Bull Run watershed 19 times earlier this year, which resulted in the city briefly switching the backup supply in February. It was the first time Portland had found the potentially dangerous parasite since, how long do you think it's been since?
Since the early 90s.
2011.
Oh, okay.
So there are many types of Cryptosporidium that are, and not all are known to make people sick, but the federal rules do not distinguish between the types. There hasn't been a detection since mid-March, the Water Bureau says, hoping we don't notice that how terrible that is, that it's only been since mid-March. Even though there's no public health risk, the variance is being revoked. So Portland can no longer use the Bull Run water as it has in the past because of those detections. A new plan must be in place by September 22nd. So in the meantime, they are testing on a weekly basis for more of that. So
the bottom line of that article is what?
Portland has to build a new water treatment facility there keeps being outbreaks of that.
Wasn't part of what they talked about covering the current water supply? Like, wasn't a big freak out last year that somebody peed in the reservoir?
Yeah.
And then they flushed it. We're going to lose 14 gajillion gallons of water. And they're like, it's just pee. It's okay. And
working for the Water Bureau is being the Sean Spicer of local government. It's just like flames and destruction happening around you, and you're hoping nobody notices that the public water is full of pee and poop. Anyway, so yeah, there has to be a new water treatment plant. For now, it's safe. Look away. There's nothing to see here. So moving to where is this story found? I'm imagining India, but I think I might have cut that part out. But a monkey mafia is stealing things and then selling them back to the tourists for crackers. Long-tailed macaques living near an Indonesian temple have figured out how to run a ransom racket on visiting tourists. The monkeys grab valuables such as glasses, hats, cameras, and cash, and then wait for the staff. They're stealing stuff from the staff to offer them food. Although this behavior has been reported anecdotally, it has never been scientifically studied in the wild. It's a unique behavior, and it's one of the only places in Bali where it's found, says a scientist, who suggests it's a learned behavior rather than innate ability. She wants to determine whether or not it was indeed cultural, and which could help us better understand the monkey's cognitive abilities. She watched all these monkeys, and they would steal things and then wait until people fed them to give them back. So... and then it's being passed around. That information is being passed down, which was the interesting part, from generation to generation,
right?
And to other monkeys that were coming into the area.
Wow!
So they were all starting to learn that. So beware of the monkey pickpocketers. Anyway, so don't go to Indonesia if you don't want to be robbed by monkeys. moving on, Amazon opens a grocery kiosk pickups to rival Walmart. So they opened two grocery pickup kiosks in Seattle, part of its latest effort to enter the $800 billion grocery market and compete with click and collect shopping options from big stores like Walmart. So the Amazon Fresh Pickup Spot lets shoppers buy groceries online and then pick them up in as little as 15 minutes rather than having delivered to their homes. The service is open to Amazon Prime members. Each location has parking space beneath the canopies, similar to gas stations. So Amazon is experimenting with brick and mortar concepts to get a toehold in grocery stores while its competitors add online options to their existing stores. Amazon, we talked about this a while back, also had a convenience store called Amazon Go that let shoppers in with a smartphone app, grab sandwiches, salads, and other items without paying. Instead, it was charged to their credit card. So they're testing more to get more into the grocery industry. So it can take over that too. So all of these buildings that are going to be, I just read another thing about 25% of shopping malls are projected to be out of business in the next, you know, however many 5-10 years. So we're going to have these huge storage facilities where we used to get stuff that Amazon is going to kill. And we're going to figure out what to do with all this real estate.
It's Amazon owns
everything.
So much of e-commerce, even like not just, and they continuously just leverage the position that they've got and make more inroads. So Amazon Prime Now and the Amazon Prime Pantry and the music and the Alexa and the Amazon View,
the Amazon Home with a camera on it to tell you how to get dressed,
how to dress yourself. And all of these things are just so pervasive and
like, and in the future, it's going to be one Amazon will be the only company, and then they'll just be like little sub companies under it using Amazon. Like, It's like how in Demolition Man, every restaurant is Taco Bell.
Taco Bell, right. Yeah, the great fast food wars of 2000-something.
I forgot about that. And that movie took place in 2017, as did Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Nice.
Both in the dystopian future that is 2017.
That's not the one with the shells, right? That's
Demolition Man is the
Demolition
one with the three
Man
seashells.
I love that movie. And
it is pretty good.
So what's also interesting to me is Amazon's fundamental business below the hood is a hosting company. Like like Netflix, who is a direct competitor to Amazon Prime Video, hosts all of their servers on Amazon servers, on AWS infrastructure. And so Netflix is paying Amazon to stream their stuff.
Man.
From the Amazon servers.
Well, I guess that makes sense why I just saw that Bezos is projected to be the world's richest man in a span of time over Bill Gates.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Phenomenal. So, yeah. So much going on.
Man. All right. One last story. 40 others bitten and one died after vampire bats attack humans in Brazil. The death is a first recorded case of human rabies transmitted by bat in Brazil since 2004. Last Saturday, May 27, the disease control teams from the state health authority were out in force culling vampire bats by catching and applying a venom paste to their body in a bid to control the rising numbers. So they're saying that all these bats are being driven out of their natural habitat, which is being cut down. They usually feed on, they do just survive on blood, which I didn't know. I thought maybe like vultures, they would have like a meat involved, but it is just blood and usually cows and horses. But since they're losing a lot of their farmland, all of those bats are coming into the city and feeding on humans and cats and dogs and all that. So do watch out for bats if you are in Brazil soon.
Sounds terrible.
Sounds terrible. And I have, for Emerson listens, I have
macaque.
So watch out for those. Oh, I'm sorry. What's happening?
Barely.
What in the world is... Sorry. Good grief. That was an ad for Vivo somehow. Just started auto-playing.
Awesome. Hello, is this Brian the Unipiper Kid?
Hello, Mark.
Hi, Brian.
There's your friend.
I feel like we just talked. I know. We're trying something new. I told Mark to handle these segments because I don't feel like I'm doing a good enough job at them. So, I always feel like I'm fumbling all of the balls that you handle me that you hand me throughout the conversation. So
and
I'm just a street performer. It's all my fault.
Cool. Speaking of street performer,
See, I never had segues like that.
we saw you, Nick and I went down and saw you last night in the Rose Festival Starlight Parade, and it was fantastic.
Good. I have no idea what it looked like from the other end.
Yeah. So you were early in the parade. There was only like one small group ahead of you that was basically the color guard. And
I don't think we call them that anymore, Mark.
Not colored guard.
Oh, was, okay. I'm
the
sorry.
Color awkward. Guard. Yeah. The African American guard? No, this has gone south all of a sudden. So you were really kind of kicking off the content portion of the parade, if you will. And so you were dressed in your standard issue Darth Vader outfit, but you had accented it with a lot of red LEDs. So you had a lot of red around you, and then your tire on your unicycle, your wheel on your unicycle also had red LEDs, and then the flames went a lit, And it was pretty fantastic. And,
nice. That sounds awesome. I saw clips of it.
Totally a crowd pleaser. The crowd was really, really, really into you.
Oh, awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So from my end, I did kind of later realize that going first is it's a double-edged sword. It wasn't as dark if you lead the parade.
Right.
So my lights didn't come through quite like I envisioned they would. Also, what happened, I don't know if you heard of anyone who watched the broadcast on Fox 12, but they completely cut the Unipiper out of the broadcast.
No.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Total bummer.
I have their broadcast, and I have edited the section in which the Unipiper should appear, and you can see me on the edge of the frame, and then they cut directly from the leading car, and they're like, this is our pace car, and then they cut to the Lexus dealership of Portland behind me.
Oh, brother.
And then they say something, they're like, oh, you might hear some bagpipes in the background, that's the Unipiper.
Oh, they're
so
dead to me.
I'm gonna post that tomorrow, and I'm gonna call them out.
Good for you.
Because I put a lot of time and effort into my costume, and that to be,
is that the only channel it aired on?
To my knowledge,
I did
see KGW cameras, but I don't believe they were showing the whole thing live. They were probably just filming clips.
Yeah, they were just reporting on it. And friend of the show, Brian Turner, was joining you. He was your fire safety patrol. Is that what his rules? And
so
his outfit was also fantastic. He dressed as the white stag of the Portland sign.
Oh, nice. And, I did see that.
And so he had a white horse head that was trimmed in the lights, just like the white stag is. And then on his shirt, he had the, Portland, Oregon sign and everything. So he was the stag and the Portland, Oregon sign. And
that's amazing.
And marched with you. And the combination of you two really cemented Portlandy to the parade, and so it was fantastic. I'm really glad that we went down there.
Wow, that's great. I'm really glad. I'm glad that you came out, and I'm glad that you had such a good time there. When we came back to the house, Brian Turner had left his car here, so we were taking some photos of ourselves together, and he was trying to get through my front door with his stag head on, and he had to sort of dip down low, and just the angle that he was coming in through the door with this glowing head, it looked really, really creepy. So
I saw him post that picture. I probably use that as the episode picture today.
Yeah.
Because it's a hilarious picture.
It is a David Lynchian.
So how long is the parade route? It's like 2.5 miles.
It was 2.25.
2.25,
which I think technically makes it the longest parade route that I have ever done.
Huh.
Last year I did the Division Clinton Street Parade, which was only 2 miles. But it felt 10 times longer.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's a testament to how well-paced the Starlight Parade was. Once it started, it didn't really stop. And it was a lot of forward momentum. Even though I was on my unicycle, I probably did the entire 2.25 miles 4 times with the number of loops I was making.
Right.
But the Clinton parade last year, I must have looped 10 times that amount. I was dead.
Wow. Yeah. I could tell that you had a long distance to go because you, we were right across from the Fox broadcast. And so we saw you kind of at the peak of, it's probably in the middle of the parade, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And you doing so many zigzags and loops, I felt for you and how much you had to travel.
It was a good workout, and the parade experience itself was fantastic. I've never performed for a crowd quite like that. Just the throngs of people and how densely packed they were along the entire route, it provided like such an adrenaline rush for the whole parade that I didn't have time to really stop and think. I was like, people, 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 gotta entertain.
That's great.
It flew by.
That's great. What else is going on?
Let's continue to talk about the Rose Parade a little bit, shall we?
Perfect.
Did you notice last night any gentlemen or ladies wearing white suits and straw hats?
Are we talking about the Rosarians?
We are talking about the Rosarians. This is something I had never really brought to my knowledge before last night. Do you know of the Rosarians?
I do know of the Rosarians, but I don't know anything about them. I know that you see them at the airport for certain events, and definitely the Rose Festival and different like Portland specific. There's Indy in the background.
There's Indy.
And so I don't know where what their origin story is. Like okay. where do Rosarians come
what
from?
What are the Rosarians?
So I looked into this a little bit today because I was really intrigued by these characters that were acting very professional and you know, seemed like I should know who they were last night. So I went to their website, and they are the official greeters and ambassadors of goodwill for the city of Portland by a mayoral declaration. And they were formed in 1912. And they promote the best interest of the city of Portland and the Portland Rose Festival. And they go on to claim as ambassadors of goodwill and official greeters, the Rosarians welcome visiting dignitaries from around the world and host hundreds of out-of-town visitors each year. So it sounds like a really cool thing that I don't know about you, but I think that the Unipiper could be a Rosarian.
Absolutely.
I think that would be a lot of fun to have the Unipiper be a welcomer of visiting dignitaries. But here is where I have a problem with it. As a group that claims, and they are an official designation as a representation of the city, they have an awful lack of diversity. If you look at their membership on their website, they have a photograph, and they are all old white men. There's like 300 of them, and they didn't start letting women in until 1989.
Oh, geez.
And there is absolutely no information on the website about how you go being a member or applying for membership.
So I don't know that I know what we're talking about. What are we talking about? People downtown wearing white suits?
So the Rose, I've seen them for decades in the 90s and 2000s. It's a group of people that they wear. They wear outfits that you would normally attest to somebody from 1912. Their uniform.
So what is their name again? Changed. Let me Google it.
Rosarians.
Rosarians.
So they are the Royal Rosarians.
Yeah, the Royal Order of the Rosarians. And they have different positions.
Okay. So I guess I always just thought they were like down, and I guess they are just downtown tour guides.
Not exactly. They are the ambassador. They are the official greeters of Portland.
He's wearing a giant cape.
Yes.
They have capes. Their council is made up of positions such as prime minister
and Lord High Chancellor. So this is a chancellor of the exchequer. What is that word? E-X-C-H-E-Q-U-E-R. What is this? I was going to make a joke about, at least they weren't the Rosicrucians, but apparently they are.
They might, yeah.
The Rosicrucians are a community of mystics who study and practice the medical physical laws of governing the universe.
Yes.
So I am going to take it upon myself to see and document the process of getting the Unipiper to be a member of this society. I will infiltrate it and report back on my findings.
That cape is going to be glorious that they are going to give you. Oh my gosh, this is amazing.
I would love to rock that cape.
This is really, yeah, keep us up.
I don't know if there's an age threshold. The youngest member is currently 37 years old.
Okay. Oh, are you on? I guess I was assuming everyone was at old like me, so maybe in a couple years you'll
like
be ready for that, I guess.
Decade, you'll be.
That's funny. Oh, that's super interesting.
Portland's own secret society.
So. Yeah.
Very cool. And because the Rosarians go with each float has a Rosarian that goes with them.
Okay. And I think in my head, I'm conflating with the ones that do that at the Rose Parade down like the California.
Right.
Parade. Cause they have
Pasadena.
Those.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. And I have seen them at the airport, incidentally, you know, one out of 10 times I'm at the airport, I see.
So fascinating.
Rosarian. It makes more sense now,
I guess.
Or
does opens, it?
Opens so many more questions. yeah, that's really
so
cool.
So one other interesting Rose Festival thing going on this week, well, a couple of them actually. Fleet Week is starting. That's when all the ships are coming in.
Nice.
So Mark, I guess you can get back on your sub or something.
That's right.
Dragon Boat races are coming up this weekend. And tomorrow night at the Hollywood Theater, they're showing a film called From One Rose. It apparently came out in 2007, and it is a docudrama examining the history of the Rose Festival through the eyes of a Portland woman who lived through it.
Interesting.
I've never heard of this, but it certainly sounds interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Cool.
Huh.
Yeah.
One question that we had before the show started today is there any information about a timeline for the Willamette Week Best of Portland stuff?
Yes. Yeah, so after the voting, which takes place in May, they announced the winners in the Best of Portland issue, which comes out sometime in the first week of July.
Gotcha.
Oh, July. Gotcha. Okay. So next month then.
Yeah, we have to wait a whole month now.
So right now they're tabulating.
They're tallying the votes. They're running the numbers.
They're counting dangling chads.
They are. They're sending their note off to PricewaterhouseCoopers, and they're gonna send back screwed up envelopes, and so that what's his face can read the wrong name.
La La Land wins best celebrity.
Well, with as many categories as they had, seriously, I can see it taking a full month.
That's yep. funny. Any news or updates on the super secret project that you've been a part of that is coming up sometime?
Good question, Todd. I'm dying to say something about it, but I have no official updates yet.
Okay.
Please ask again next week.
I will.
We will do.
We will get back to you.
Cool. What? Anything else?
I should also briefly mention there's just so much going on this month and right now in Portland. So I should briefly mention this is Portland Beer Week. There's so many beer events and festivals that go on. I've lost complete track and I don't really know what is making this one special, but there are some beer events going on this week. So check out pdxbeerweek.com for information if you want to check out some beer festivities. And then it's also Pedal Palooza going on right now. The month of June is Pedal Palooza. That's when they have all of those various bike rides. There are 276 sanctioned different themed bike rides this year. Everything from the Star Wars versus Star Trek ride.
What? What are you? What?
So you Nick and I, Nick and I have seen. I'm not. But we've seen like five different groups, like five different times we've seen an extraordinary number of people dressed up or going in similar garb or doing something. So
is this
what
all
is,
on
what
one
is Pedalpalooza?
Or, yeah.
No, it goes on all month long. So for the month of June, there are anywhere from 10 to 15 rides that take place per day in different locations.
Oh,
and this is it's a little bit underground, but like within the biking community, it's a huge deal. People actually travel to Portland just to take part in some of these rides.
Clogging our streets.
Yes,
clogging our bicycles streets. Dressed up as unicorns.
Yeah, some of the larger rides attract hundreds, if not thousands, of riders.
Isn't the naked bike ride coming up?
The naked bike ride is part of Pedal Palooza.
Okay.
It is the most the biggest ride and the most famous ride of Pedal Palooza.
Right. Okay.
That's taking place on June 24th. Also, last year Pedal Palooza was in the news somewhat because one of the rides traditionally had been the Prince versus David Bowie ride, and that was officially retired last year. Last year was the last year they did that.
Oh.
Yeah.
R.I.P. R.I.P.
So yeah, Pedalpalooza. Check it out at shift2bikes.org. Shift is the group that puts on Pedalpalooza. There is sure to be some ride right up your bike alley.
Sweet.
Cool. Yep.
Very cool. Well, I think that's it. So, how could people find out more information about you, the Unipiper?
Check me out on the internets at unipiper.com. I'm going to be posting some events on my calendar there. You can track me on the Unipiper GPS map when I'm out riding around. That's probably the easiest way to find me. And stay up to date on all my social media postings on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Awesome. Nice. Cool. Well, we will talk to you again next week.
Okay. Hey, one more thing. I'm sorry. I completely meant to talk about this earlier, but did you happen to hear the speakers read the Unipiper script last night during the parade?
I did not. We
do what?
We were only we were across the street, but they weren't announcing it out loud over the loudspeakers.
Okay.
And so what did they say?
Well, it was general stuff about the Unipiper, but at the very end, they threw in a plug for Portland at the Movies.
What?
Wow.
Nice.
So throughout the parade route, they had five or six scaffolding set up where they were reading information about the different entries. And so everyone in the parade got to plug to listen to the Unipiper on his brand new podcast at Portland at the Movies.
I might have to make our website server a little bit bigger.
I know, I was going
to
say,
the load.
And which might be surprising even to Brian the Unipiper, next week will be a very next episode of Portland at the Movies.
Yeah, we were just talking about this. We'll talk about this later, Brian.
All right. I know what I'll be watching tonight then.
Extraordinary Measures. Spoilers, it's terrible. All right, well, we'll talk to you later, Ryan.
Okay.
Today is June 4th. Last weekend was
Bonkers crazy party that we won't go into on the show, but was one of the craziest things that I've ever seen. Not the party wasn't like crazy, like a rave party, but there was what did you say? Like 300 people there, 400,
more than 500. So we had
more than 500 of the most flawlessly beautiful and hip people I have ever seen in my entire life. An elevator opening to like what felt like Studio 54, me in my plaid shirt.
So I organized the open house for our company, and so we had a lot of people there. And there was a certain contingency of people who heard about the party through others and just showed up. Right. And it was a perfect night. The weather was perfect. We had alcohol and food and everything, just looking out over Portland. The sunset was magnificent, and then it all ended in the fireworks display from the Rose Festival kickoff, which happened on May 26th, last Friday. And they do a 15-20 minute firework display that is actually pretty substantial.
It went on for a long time.
It's not totally a mini fireworks display. It's right. Not exactly the 4th of July, but it's 75% of the 4th of July.
Yeah.
It's solid and has its own stuff. And so Brian the Unipiper actually recommended a topic for talking about fireworks and the science of fireworks. Mm-hmm. And so I thought we would discuss that today.
Perfect.
And so fireworks, there's always the lore of fireworks. There's a lot of things that we know concretely, and then there's a lot of things that we know from rumor or tradition or whatever. We suspect that fireworks started more than 2,000 years ago in China, and they say. Originated in China some 2,000 years ago, the most prevalent legend has that fireworks were discovered or invented by accident by a Chinese cook working in a field kitchen who happened to mix charcoal, sulfur, and saltpeter, all commonly found in the kitchen those days. And so if you had those three ingredients, the mixture burned, and when compressed into an enclosure like a bamboo tube, the mixture would explode. And so...
So was this pre-gunpowder? When did gunpowder kind of come into play?
That,
or is that, that basically would gunpowder?
That is basically gunpowder. Okay. And so once you compress and ignite gunpowder, you have a firework.
Mm-hmm.
And I somehow turned off our video feed, but we still had audio going. I'm sorry about that period of black screen that
although,
you just saw.
Are we really sorry for that?
not too sorry. And so we... That seems to be the most plausible origin of gunpowder and fireworks. And so basically taking that explosion technology, and then they applied it to ultimately to war weapons, as they were able to make rockets that delivered an explosion over towards a foe versus an explosion that they could use for celebratory purposes. And,
right.
And so the Chinese New Year's is generally conflated or what's it, you associated with fireworks
and
firecrackers especially. And then the components of fireworks, I mean, it is all ultimately that basic core tenet of gunpowder, and then they add some chemicals into the gunpowder to make it burn at different rates and different colors. And so there's a little chart that they made. Let me see if I can pull this chart up. For the different colors are associated with different chemicals. And so we get red from strontium, orange from calcium, yellow from sodium, green from barium, blue from copper, purple from copper and strontium, silver from magnesium and aluminum, and white from just straight up burning metal, magnesium, aluminum, and titanium.
I wonder what they make the black one, those black fireworks.
Yeah.
I wonder what those are made out of.
The daytime Satan. Fireworks.
Yeah. Those are terrifying.
Those are made out of evil.
Yeah.
they are haunting and frightening.
They are.
Because you don't see the trail of them being ascended up to that. They just appear. And it kind of reminds me of the flak explosions that you see in old time war movies, that a plane is going through and then there's explosions
out in the sky
around them, and you see like Band of Brothers and others. And
there's
that's
something
what
about
reminds,
especially
reminds
the black ones that it's so upsetting to see something so black in the air, like just suddenly appear. There's just such an inky, gross feeling. Amazing.
I absolutely agree. And so, so I assume that those are quick firing, and so it's just going to have none of these chemicals, because it's not looking for the color of the flame,
right.
It's looking for the blackest smoke.
Right.
And so I'm sure that there is a specific chemical
Tires.
That they exactly licorice that they make the black smoke from, and so that's the chemistry of it. The basics of all of the aerial fireworks kind of boil down to the same kind of mechanism. So what happens is there's two major explosions that happen in a firework. One is this lift charge, and the lift charge is an explosion that happens that propels the unit up into the air.
The launching.
The launching of it. And so that is tied to the firework itself. It is a base unit of the firework that is being detonated. So what happens is there's a fuse that is built that comes down to the top and leads to two separate fuses. One is a quick fuse and one's a really slow fuse. The quick fuse has to travel further distance. It goes all the way around the shell and goes all the way down to the lift charge and hits the lift charge, which propels the shell up into the sky. It goes several hundred feet up. And then meanwhile, this slow fuse is going down until it hits the burst charge, which is in the middle of the shell. And all that does is explode everything out from the inside out. And so around the edge of this shell are little units of
little pellet balls
that are the stars. And each of these can have their own characteristics. So they can have layers of explosions in themselves, as you see when those big shells go off, and sometimes the stars make little trails off of them or change color or they spin.
Right.
And they and spin off. Well, those would be individual stars that have a coating on most of it, but the point of ignition is offset so that when that lights, the propellant is shot at an angle, not straight.
Sure.
And so it forces that star to spin.
To spin.
Instead of to just be propelled quicker in that same direction.
Right.
So there's other things that they can do with streaks of sparks going up. So you see a lot of the comet looking ones that are the propellant includes some magnesium or aluminum or titanium that are shooting off and creating those white sparks of the trail behind them. Another one that I loved seeing was the in San Diego, maybe 8 years back now, on 4th of July, they had a malfunction of their computer system and every single firework was lit off at the same time.
I remember that.
And it was fantastic.
A spectacular 18 seconds.
Exactly. It all happened in less than a minute and it was nuclear looking because every single firework for that 25 minute show happened simultaneously. And the crowd was mesmerized and then wildly disappointed because literally the entire show happened less than a minute, but that show was magnificent.
Yeah.
You know, and meanwhile, you know, Neil Diamond's Coming to America was playing in the background, or Lee Greenwood is telling us how proud he is to be an American. And so that song is drifting on while the fireworks display ended a half an hour ago.
I've seen a lot too where like one of the things falls over or whatever and they just fired directly into the crowd screaming people, or like the fire for there's some good fireworks factory fires.
Yeah, so that have happened. There's been a couple. There's one town in Mexico.
I feel like the tone just got real.
In Mexico there's a town I can't remember the name of it right now, but that town produces the vast majority of consumer level fireworks.
Okay.
And about 6 years ago there was an explosion in the town that took out much of the market. And this happened again about 4 months ago. And both times people died and it was tragic and terrible. But it literally like wipes out big swaths of the town.
Jeez.
As this town is it manufactures fireworks, and that's what the town does. And it's crazy.
Have you seen the video of what they call the world's largest firework?
I did watch that shell. So there's one shell that weighs over 1,500 pounds.
Good grief.
They lift it in by a crane. And it's got a mortar unit underneath it that propels that 1,500 pounds, 850 feet in the air. And the edge of that you know, umbrella that it creates hits the ground at 850 feet. And so, you know, it's easily 2,000 feet across in its width, and it, and each of those stars has trails on it and goes through like three color changes, yeah, and each of those go off, and
I'll make sure to link it because it's such a cool,
it is really, really magnificent. So besides the U.S. government, who buys more explosives than anyone else in
country wise or like industry wise?
Well, then in our country.
Well, I'm guessing, what did they call the, in California, they always had the safe and sane, were always like the little kiosk, because in California, you couldn't ever buy any fireworks, because everything is just ready to go up in flames. But you'd have the little, like in the grocery store parking lots, they were always safe and sane was the brand of fireworks, I remember, or Red Devil.
Red Devil. So when Red Devil was around, my grandmother wouldn't allow us to buy from Red Devil fireworks.
Oh, because of the devil.
Because it was satanic.
Nice.
That was awesome.
It's so obvious. They're putting it right on the box and you're still buying it up.
So Disney, the Disney Corporation.
Right.
Buys more fireworks than anyone else in the nation. More
because they're doing it like every day,
every single night. Both theme parks are shooting off a full 20-minute display, and their cruise ships each have a firework
show display, of some sort.
Show during the cruise,
right?
And so it's,
and are they all coming from this one Mexican factory?
I don't know where they. I know that. The Disney Corporation owns a lot of patents on fireworks.
Interesting.
They have a specialized shell that creates the iconic
Mickey Mouse
shape. It's got, you know, if you arrange those balls in the shell appropriately, when that internal detonation goes off, you can create a ring of things or a heart of things.
Yeah.
They've created a pattern that creates the mouse shape.
Right.
And so they've got patents on that and patents on certain colors and based on certain mixes of chemicals. And
patents on photons.
Patents on gunpowder. And so the Disney Corporation, far and away, and there, I couldn't find any solid numbers because it's a trade secret,
right,
of how much they spend, even though they're a public company. That part is not
interesting.
Public. But it's estimated definitely in the $50 to $100 million range per year.
Man.
in just fireworks and nothing else.
That's insane.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if that number was bigger. You know,
Well, because you think about those huge fireworks displays going off in multiple locations every single day.
Yeah,
and then the cruise ships, and then the
We could see the Disney fireworks from my roof in Hollywood.
Oh wow!
When I lived in Hollywood, Nick and I were down there. You on a clear night, and we were easily 30 miles away, maybe 20 miles away.
Wow.
As the crow flies. And so we could see it from our hill there.
Wow.
And, it was fantastic.
Neat.
And so they do that also in Florida. Epcot has something, but it's not like the Magic Kingdoms, and each of their other shows have pyrotechnics in them as well. So they're a big pyrotechnic, company there at Disney.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense, though.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that's kind of it. So we've got another month until the 4th of July, and then we will be able, there, a lot of the consumer laws are changing.
Yeah,
so,
well, now in Washington State, right?
Washington
State
was... You're
not allowed to have any?
Yeah, Washington State was, especially in Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah, that's, I think, what I read.
Was one of the holdouts of... a town, a real live town that allowed you to pretty much have any solid firework, any decent firework, that,
right,
including mortars that you could shoot off and anything other than basically rockets that would have explosives on them. So right. you couldn't have that, but you could have everything else. And that ended on the 1st of January this last year. And
wow. So, they still have the, I remember when we first moved here, my ex-wife and I, we went to watch the Fort Vancouver fireworks because they yep. have a huge, huge display. And we had to park off the side of the freeway, like on one of the on-ramps right around there is like one of the big round curly Q ones or whatever, where you take a 360, get on the freeway. And people just stopped on the freeway yep. and like parked their cars, and there were kids running around, and everyone's like, and it was a super dry year. I remember that. And like kids firing Roman candles into like the dry brush. And I remember saying, I'm like, this felt like Kosovo refugees. Cause there's like madness and fire and people shooting them at each other and dry brush and loud noises. And it was insane.
It was absolutely insane. And clearly that's why they quit it is, every year, some bunch of dumbasses get burnt, but
thin the herd a little bit.
In order to get to the Fort Vancouver fireworks area, you had to walk through the Fort Vancouver area, and that was always a war zone. It was absolutely if I had war bound PTSD, I know that I would be totally triggered.
I remember going to a fireworks display in Kennewick, Washington, over the Columbia River, and they did it from a barge in the middle of the river, and it was neat and or whatever. But, you know, as soon as firework displays are over, everybody makes a mad dash to their cars or whatever. And so there was still smoke in the air and noise and people again, like doing the Roman candles, and we're like going through fences and under brush. And it felt like a war zone. It was crazy. People cowering and yelling and firing and that's so funny.
Good times.
Well, no, that's interesting. And it's kind of neat to see a technology that has been fundamentally unchanged yep. for 2,000 years, other than, I would say, computer firing mechanisms.
Yeah, and right now, basically, the planning of them are very computer-controlled because right. now they can simulate everything. So they have their entire inventory of all their shells and all of their colors and all the things that they can do loaded into the 3D software.
Right.
And then they load in the skyline of the city, and then they build the show on their computer, and they're like, all right, this will be $157,000.26.
Wow.
And, you know, and basically print out a receipt for
the show.
Okay, these need to be generated, and these individual shells need to be generated.
Wow.
And
do they when they do the 4th of July ones in Portland, do they sync it to
music?
The radio? Because Yakima, Washington, of all places, used to do that.
Yes.
You'd park by the fairgrounds or whatever, right. and never did turn their
right. And of course, you know, it's always the same.
Yeah, like it's seven thousand. You know, one and.
And Neil Diamond,
that's right.
And
so awful.
You know, definitely the Star Spangled Banner and America the Beautiful. And,
some Hank Williams Jr. song. Of some
it
sort.
Is the best gig ever to write a
seasonal holiday song. Like
exactly.
That.
To write a song that recurs, you know, like Let's Party Like It's 1999 was a lot before 1999. And it's a total resurgence of that.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Anyway. Cool.
Well, cool. No, that was interesting. We forgot. Well, we didn't really forget to go to the Unipiper because at this point you've already heard it. So we don't need to do that. but this was episode 87 already. We are coming in on 100. So I'm still trying to put together something or other for the 100th episode. So if there's something that you remember that you had enjoyed hearing, not necessarily a main topic, but something else that we've talked about at some point that you'd like to hear again without having to go searching for it yourself, let me know. And I'll make some sort of clip show perhaps. I think that's one of my projects I'm going to do on vacation in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to be, that's another thing. And so at the end of June, I'm going to be going on vacation, but we will have Brian, the Unipiper special guest filling in for me on whatever episode. So I will get to tune into the Mark and Toddcast myself.
Will that be the Mark and Brian
show? It'll be Mark and Brian show. Yeah. Mark and Brian in the mornings. I'm finally edged out. That's what they're like. Broadcasters are paranoid to go on vacation because it's happened before. They'll go on vacation. They'll come back. It's like, sorry, we gave your job to the fill-in guy. So
he's funnier than you.
He's better than you. So yeah, tune in July for the Mark and Brian cast on that one. But next week we'll be doing another episode of Portland at the Movies.
Yep.
Our movie this month is Extreme. I always forget. Dang that! But there's an Extreme Measures and there's an Extraordinary Measures. I believe we are extraordinary. Have you ever done the thing where your fingers are one key off
on
the keyboard and everything is like Cyrillic? Extraordinary Measures, which is a movie made in Portland here in 2010, starring Harrison Ford and Brendan Fraser. It is based on a true story. Kerry Russell is in it too, and everyone is terrible. But that will be our next movie for Portland at the Movies. So tune into that sometime next week, and also on the Fun Employment Radio Network. So other than that, I'm going to take us out. Do we have anything else to announce or not?
Nope.
I think that was everything.
That's it.
As much as I love Katy Perry, which I guess is not a whole lot, but I do enjoy Katy Perry, and this song Firework. It has the worst lyric I think I've ever heard in a pop song, which is, "Do you ever feel like a plastic bag?" Which is the first lyric of the song. So we will catch you guys next time. Thank you for listening. Do you ever feel like a plastic bag? Drifting through the wind, wanting to start again. Cause baby, you're a firework. Come on, show me. Awesome.